Blow the horn. Let's go.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
There's some place they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
He fumbled and Alabama has recovered.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown, Alabama.
It's 13 national championships.
Roll Tide!
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Daniel Moore, get your canvas ready.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast, where today we'll rip the scab right off a fresh wound and poke at it. Tom, to call this a tale of two halves would be to understate the extremes. Rather, it was the tale of two blowouts. A 24-0 Bama run followed all too closely by a 28-3 Auburn run. The net result, a 28-27 score that really belies the competitive nature of this game. Up, down, offense, defense, where do you want to start?
You know, I just wanted to first talk about just the game in general. I think it just epitomizes what we've talked about all season with this team, and that is, you know, their ability not to finish. You know, Coach Saban has been preaching this and looking for consistency, and, you know, there is no scoreboard, and, you know, play 60 minutes, you know, nonstop the whole game. And this team has been able to put together one good half in different games this year, but not be able to put together a whole game.
No, and this is to the extreme, right? We jump up 24 points. And Auburn manages, we allow Auburn to come back, and hats off to Auburn for not quitting. But a 24-point deficit is the largest comeback in the history of their program. So to say that we didn't compete as hard in the second half, it understates how significant, how much the drop-off was in this game.
Well, and what's so weird about it is that it's not like McElroy threw two picks in the second half that were pick sixes returned for a touchdown. It's not like there were big turnovers that caused the game to change like this. You know, we just were not able to, you know, Coach Saban talked about it at halftime. You know, they asked him if he was happy, and he said, I'm not happy. And he talked about the missed opportunities. And we sat there in the stands at halftime, and even though it was 24-7, we were both sitting there saying, hey, we left at least 6 points on the field, you know, by those turnovers that happened in the first half. And you know, we'll get to it when we talk about the offense, but, I mean, we should have scored on our first five chances to start the game, and we thought that if this was a high-scoring game, it was going to be tough to win. Neither one of us thought that we were going to be spotted 24 points. Even with the 24-7 margin, I never would have thought we would have lost this game at the end.
No, I wouldn't have either. I thought that, you know, good college teams or good teams will trade blows. And we got a couple of shots in early. I knew that we wouldn't shut them out. They got a touchdown. I thought that we would weather their storm and then come back with our last hurrah and win the game. There was no last hurrah. So their last flurry was the margin of the game. Where do you want to take us, offense, defense?
I guess I'll start with offense. And, you know, just to kind of talk about a few plays that really were key in that first half. You know, obviously they had two defensive linemen who were not able to play in the first half. It seemed like the game plan was to put pressure on them early to attack their secondary. You know, we had 300 and something yards at halftime just through the air. You know, we were doing misdirection. We were mixing it up. We were seeing plays and formations that we had not seen all year early in the game. And we seemed to kind of go away from that in the second half.
Yeah, we definitely went away from it. One of the plays that we ran it a couple times that I really liked was it was almost a power wide receiver screen where we put tight ends out wide and we flanked Mark Ingram out wide. And so we ran a wide receiver screen with tight ends and Mark Ingram. And I like the power on the edge that afforded. We never broke one of those, but we went back to that a number of times. And I think that's a high potential play. Yeah, we went to Julio early and often, and not without good reason. Julio had 10 catches for a $199, and then he had a touchdown. But if you look at Auburn's season, you know, Greg Childs and Alshon Jeffries and A.J. Green, they all had 160 plus yards, 160, 70 yards. And so it's almost like they'll spot your star player, your star receiver, a buck 50, but they're just going to out earn it on their side of the ball. And they did. And so Julio, to form, had a great day, but it just wasn't enough.
No, it wasn't. And, you know, Coach Saban talked about those missed opportunities. And I guess just to highlight these, you know, we had scored the first three times we had the ball. And then we have the fumble, you know, then we have the fumble by Ingram. And as we went back and looked at the replay, you know, Mark Ingram is as sure-handed as he is. You know, he was trying to get his balance, you know, at the 2015-yard line. He was trying to say, let me keep from falling down to try to score a touchdown. And he was giving it everything he had to try to keep his balance. And as you and I noticed, that defensive lineman came behind him and was able to really methodically just, you know, just punch that ball in the air like 10 yards. And then for it to go straight down the field and through the end zone, there's 3 points right there, you know, that we didn't get.
Easily 3 points, right? We could have kicked it. And you applaud Mark and his effort and his balance and sticking with the play. It's ironic to think that if it had been you or I out there, we just would have gone down with the first hit. We would have retained possession and kicked a field goal from
there.
That's
the irony
of that.
What if he would have just tackled the guy?
Right.
Thank goodness.
Exactly.
And then, you know, and then on the on that next series, Trent Richardson pretty sure-handed drops a sure touchdown on that, you know, on that first play, you know, first and goal, and we have to settle for a field goal. And then, you know, I guess we got to talk about the, you know, the next series where McElroy fumbles. But I mean, it's hard to believe, because we thought this was going to be a close, low scoring, or I thought this was going to be a close, low scoring game. You take away some of those mistakes, and we could have scored all six times we had the ball in the first half.
Well, we could have. If you take Mark's, you know, Mark's fumble, that's a touchdown or a field goal. You take Trent's drop, if he just catches the ball, that's a touchdown. And then the McElroy fumble, you know, we just looked at the replay on that. It was actually Mark's helmet that jarred the ball loose and forced that. And, you know, I guess you don't know what's going to happen. Is that, you know, a touchdown or field goal? But, you know, I'll take my chances kicking the ball there. And so you start to add up a lot of additional points. And it sounds like sour grapes, but it is. That's when Coach talks about leaving plays on the field. That's exactly it. We didn't just leave plays. We left points on the field. And then just, I guess, just a, you know, symmetrical, you know, if you will, Trent's drop, and we called this out as we were watching the game. It was run to the other direction, but that was the Upchurch touchdown from last year. So it was neat to see that run. I wish it was as successful on Saturday or on Friday as it was last year.
No, that's true. And, you know, I guess the other thing is, we're talking about the offense, which is frustrating about this year's team, is this year's, you know, obviously Barrett Jones was not playing in the game. And, you know, there's people that's quoted that saying he's the best offensive lineman that we have. He's the guy that we typically ask to pull on the traps and the counters. And he's typically that lead blocker. And, you know, we didn't have him. Fluker seemed to have gotten banged up pretty early. Sting,
yep,
got banged up a little. But in the three losses that this team has had, they have thrown the ball more than they have rushed the ball. And, you know, this is the same situation. If you look at the stats, you know, McElroy dropped back to pass 45 times. You only gave it to Ingram and Richardson 10 times each. And we looked at this with South Carolina and LSU. I mean, what did Auburn do? Auburn had 41 rushing attempts, 20 pass attempts. That's what Alabama typically does when we win a ball game. And so for this team in the second half, if this would have been last year's team with this kind of a lead, chalk it up, it's over, because they'd have sat in the second half and just grind the clock. And this year's team, even when we did run the ball in this game, we didn't even run the ball between the tackles. We ran the ball on the edges because we didn't even think we could get a push up the middle.
Well, we did really struggle with that. And you know, on a couple of plays, I was watching Steen, and you know, unfortunately, he missed his block a couple times. And I know Trent was geared to make a run. Looks like he was going to bust through the line. And Steen missed his block. And just as Trent was making his move at the line of scrimmage, he was tackled you know, from behind. And you think, you know, if you stand in front of the defender, on that
little out in the flats. Yeah.
Right. If you just stand in front of the defender, he's not able to get his arms around Trent's waist. And that's a 4 or 5, 6 yard gain. And you start putting those together, and that's where you get the running game. And so if you have a coach, and maybe we do in Michael Wayne, I don't know. But if you have a coach that's quick to pull the trigger on the running game, or pull the rug out from under the running game, and then you have those missed blocks that sort of self-fulfilling prophecy. We can't run because we don't run because we can't run. And that's what we saw. And if you make a couple of those blocks and you get those 3 and 4 yard gains, it incents you to keep doing it, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
No, that's true. And we kind of talked about it after the game. You were like, you know, I was talking about the running game, and you were like, well, why didn't we keep, you know, you were like, but it wasn't working. And I was like, but no, man, I mean, what the whole point is that on that 28th or 29th or 30th carry, that's when you're going to bust it loose. And this year's team, I don't know, we just don't have that.
But, you know, in fairness, we were very successful with the pass early on. You know, McElroy was started 12 for 12. His 13th pass was a throwaway, which was good to get rid of the ball. And his 14th pass was Trent's drop, not to go back to that. But, you know, you could effectively say that, you know, if Trent holds on that onto that ball, you know, we're 13 of 14 with our miss being a throwaway. Technically, you know, that's 14 for 14 in terms of doing what you're supposed to do with the ball. A little different execution, and that's a touchdown. And I think it is a different game.
No, that's true. And you know, momentum is such a huge factor in with these college kids, with this college game. And I guess we also need to point out very quickly that for Auburn to be able to go in only down 17 at the half and score that quick touchdown at the beginning of the second half, and then they kick the ball out of bounds and we get it at the 40. And our first drive is from the 40. And to me, that drive epitomized, really, if you look at the second half, we start at the 40. We have 7 plays for 10 yards. So we start out the gate, who Gary Danielson was talking about, it's always the last 5 minutes of the first half and the first 5 minutes of the second half. Well, look how they started that second half. And then we have great field position, and we go 10 yards.
Right.
And it seemed like it just went downhill from there.
It did, and giving them that, you know, that first possession of the second half, giving them that quick touchdown. You know, it wasn't a pick six to flip the game, but when they come back in within seconds and they put a quick touchdown on, that's even, you know, maybe even more demoralizing than a pick, because it's against your defense, and then they just score so quickly. And having been behind, you know, if they drive the field and burn 6 minutes and get a touchdown, well, okay, that's one thing. But we're going to give them a touchdown in exchange for about 12 seconds, and that's significant. Carries over to defense. What else did you see on defense?
You know, from a defensive standpoint, we had some, I think we had a pretty good game plan. I think we're, you know, we talked about this after the game. I think we're the first team that Auburn has faced that has really been able to take away Cam Newton. I mean, Cam had 22 rushes for 68 yards, but if you take away his lost yardage, he only had 40 yards on the game.
Yep.
I mean, he only netted under 2 yards a carry.
Yep.
And, you know, we sacked him 4 times. We had 9 tackles for loss. I mean, this is a team that went in, you know, after the LSU game, we only had 10 sacks on the year, and we had 4 sacks in the ball game. Now, 3 of those came from Courtney Upshaw, and it seemed like the game plan early on, and we talked about this after the Georgia State game, is we had to contain the edges.
Yep.
And it seems like this defense did a really good job out of the gate of containing the edges. And, you know, Auburn had to punt the ball 5 times in the first half.
Yeah, I thought Marcel Darius really personified, you know, playing the edges really, really well. There was a couple plays that I remember in particular. You know, one play he was setting the edge, and you know, he put his arms out and did, you know, some lateral motion to keep containment. It almost looked like a basketball player, the way he was shuffling his feet. Almost, you know, I'm not going to make the tackle. I'm not here to make the tackle. I'm just here to buffer the play to force you back inside. And another play, he had done similar, where he had gotten the outside, was setting the edge, and Cam Newton had the corner, was gonna be able to round Marcel, and Marcel just completely completely had a side to Cam Newton and just sprinted like 10 yards to force Cam Newton back to the inside, and it was effective in that he had sold out. I'm not gonna make the tackle, but I'm gonna make the play by turning the quarterback or the running quarterback inside. And those are just, I thought, two really good plays that really demonstrated that's our game plan. Here's what we're here to do, and we executed it flawlessly for 30 minutes.
Well, I actually think we did a really good job of that for the majority of the game. And if you look at the numbers, we kept them pinned in. You know, their average field position was about the 20-yard line. You know, we made them kind of go the length of the field. You know, the other thing that this jumped out at me, though, is we talked about Mark Barron a little bit, and we talked about him in space and some of the zone lapses that we've had. It also seemed like they got their big plays against Mark Barron. And, you know, not to pick on him, but it's like they said, I'm not going against Robert Lester with his 7 interceptions. And I'm not going against Dre and Milner. And, you know, in the first half, they had that play where Barron apparently tore his pectoral muscle. And he obviously was not the same player on that quick touchdown to start the second half.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing that I think you know, jumped out at me in this ball game was, man, we miss Robbie Green. And as much as we really haven't thought about that, and we talked about the interceptions and the secondary growing up, last year we got kind of used to Robbie Green playing center field, and Robbie Green would run somebody down. And I think if you had a Robbie Green deep in the secondary in this game, maybe he catches a couple people at the 10-yard line, and maybe on that Barron play where Barron was hurt, maybe he knocks the ball away.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. You know, I 2 years ago with Rashad and then last year with Robbie, you know, how many times did we see, one-on-one coverage on the edge, and you know maybe the corner's beat or the safety help comes over the top and really screams in from nowhere and grabs the ball, snags the ball in front of the receiver, and so you think maybe Robbie Green on a couple of those down the field passes where Barron seemed to struggle, you know, maybe Robbie could have made those plays where he would have screamed in and grabbed the ball. Or if it had been to the other side of the field, Lester could have done that because, you know, he's been a ball hawk this year.
And this is not picking on Barron, okay? But no, I think Barron is your head hunter. I mean, Barron is a great player, and Barron got hurt, and obviously we had nobody to come in for him. My point is that we just didn't have the true Manning the center field guy on this defense.
We
this
didn't,
year.
And I want to be fair to Barron. You know, Lester leads the team, and in fact, you know, tied for the lead in the country with 7 picks. Well, Barron had 7 picks last year too, and so it's not that he can't do that. He's just not as fast as some of the other guys, and so in cover, and then plus he was hurt. So I want to, you know, I'm not mad at Barron necessarily. I just think if we had. You know, we had to keep playing him when he was hurt because we didn't have anyone else to roll out there that, you know, 80%, 70% of Barron was better than whoever else we had up next up.
No, that's true. And, you know, and just in keeping with the defense, so they start the second half, their first series, they have, you know, a 2-play drive, a quick strike, the worst thing that we wanted to have from a momentum standpoint. And then the next time they have the ball, we're able to hold them to a punt. And I'm like, okay, that's a huge stop. Well, then what happens on the next drive, you know, Courtney Upshaw comes out of the game and suddenly Chavis Williams is in there. And the other thing I want to point out with this is that it's almost like Auburn saw an opportunity by keeping us in a base formation because, you know, Courtney's getting a rest. We bring in Chavis Williams. Chavis Williams, as we talked about against LSU, you know, he's a nice guy, but there's a reason he hasn't played before now as a senior.
He's not the answer, right?
He's not the answer. And there's a reason that here he is a senior just now getting some playing time. And Jarrell Harris, man, you must definitely be about to transfer because Chavis Williams looked so lost on 2 plays back-to-back, each accounting for 20 yards. We had just talked about them containing the edges. He comes in and doesn't hold containment, and they get 2 big plays. Then they bring in Alex Watkins instead of Chavis. He doesn't keep containment. They get another 20-yard play, and now they're at the 13-yard line. So my point is, it's almost like this is good coaching on their part. They saw an opportunity of, hey, Courtney Upshaw, the guy who's been the stud in this game, is not in there right now.
So and let's we're gonna attack
that edge.
Yeah, that's good situational play calling, right? We have a bag of tricks, and then we see the player rotation, and so let's try to take advantage of this player rotation, and so we take advantage of the second string guy, pull him out. So the third string guy comes in effect, and well, we're really going to take advantage of this guy too. Like I said, good situational play calling. So you have to applaud the Auburn coaching staff. You know, one play that I have to call out, and that one of the touchdowns that Auburn scored, and they threw the ball to Lutzenkirk and the tight end. And for me, this was a painful play because it was as if watching it in slow motion. Well, Cam took the ball, ran to the right, planted his foot, turned, and threw to the tight end across the screen.
For his only catch of the day.
But that's the oh shit play from the Florida game last year where McElroy throws the touchdown to Colin Peake. It was painful to watch that unfold. It was like slow motion. You see that happen and you think, you know, there we go. We're getting abused by our own play.
No, that's true. And when you look at those passing stats for a second, We had talked about we wanted the plan to be force Cam Newton to throw the ball. And, he ended up 13 of 20 for 200 yards, 70 coming off that one touchdown. And but then you look at the stat, three touchdowns.
Right.
How do you get three touchdowns on 13, completions? That they were just so efficient with throwing the ball.
That's the word I was going to use. That's certainly efficient. So, we said we're going to make you pass the ball, and we did, and we got it. So, I kept thinking before we moved to special teams, I kept thinking, our secondary has been the strength of our defense, and you and I have talked about that. We played a lot of nickel. We played some dime. Let's keep the play in front of us. All of those things, we lead the country and are tied for the lead for the country in interceptions. I just thought we're going to get one of these. We're just going to get one. And we never got one. And if at any stage in the game we could have gotten one, it may have been the difference. And so I just kept counting on it, and it didn't happen. Special teams, what did you see?
From a special team standpoint, I think they played pretty well. I mean, the only thing that jumped out at me that I wanted to touch on was when you look at Cody Mandel and you look at what he's done this year, coming in as a walk-on. We only ask him to punt the ball four times. But he's a guy that, he can sit there and knock off a 47-yarder. But whenever we need him to down a ball deep and do a pooch punt, he's just incapable of doing that. So it's either a 48-yarder or it's a 21-yarder.
Yeah, and you and I made the comment during the game. It seems that he can't punt with touch. He can't touch punt. Just to lace one in, and so it was a 12-yard punt. It was really bad. It would have been better for him to just kick it away. We would have netted more yards had he kicked it away out of the end zone and then put the ball on the 20. And I know what we're trying to do, but if you can't do it, then try to do the next best thing that's better than a 12-yard punt. Special teams. That was the worst of it. We did force and recover a fumble. Dre and Upshaw combined to tackle the runner on a kickoff, and
Upshaw lays the hit,
and of course we're only able to turn that into 3 points. We did kick two field goals. It was nice that we made them. I just kept thinking there at the end of the game that even with McCarron in, because Greg went out with a head injury, even with McCarron in, I thought a couple of first downs here. And we kick a long field goal, and we get to see who do we bring out to kick the long game-winning field goal, and so that would have been something that we certainly would have enjoyed at least having the opportunity to talk about. And so I guess we'll never know who would have come in and kicked that ball. Tom, what was your those two mini game balls? Who were you giving your mini game ball to for this game?
It's not a mini game ball. It's a bulletin board game ball. It has to be Courtney Upshaw, and he's a starter. He is a headliner. He's not the guy that I was counting on for this year's defense. And so when I mentioned Upshaw, you know, we talked about at the beginning of the season on the podcast, and we remember the Sports Illustrated magazine where it's got Darius and it's got Dante and it's got Mark Barron. And I remember saying, as long as we have a guy like that at each level, this year's team is going to be okay. Well, you know what? Marcell Darius, you put on 20 pounds that you couldn't lose during the season. And Dante Hightower, you're not back from your injury. But Courtney Upshaw, you have been the one, in my opinion, who has the most consistently played through injuries and tried to keep your level of excellence or kept that bar high. And you look like you did against the Florida game. Yes, Darius made a play. Yes, Dante made a play. But you know what? Marcell Darius finished the game with 3 tackles. Dante finished with 4. Courtney, you had 10 tackles, 3 tackles for loss, 2 forced fumbles, and 3 sacks. You have to get the game back.
Yeah, he filled up the game sheet, and you know, you have to applaud Courtney Upshaw. You know, he did put up the kinds of numbers in that game that we thought Darius was going to put up all season long. And I, you know, I hearken back in, you know, hindsight 2020, you know, back to the ESPN rolling with the Tide preseason camp video, and it was a funny line at the time. Unfortunately, maybe it was prophetic, but I remember, you know, Coach Saban kidding with Darius that, you know, hey, 57, I used to know you when you were fast. And that was funny, but my, how that turned out to be true, that he seemed to be a bigger guy this year and was more effective when we lined up at nose. And so,
which we kind of seem to have gone away from. You know, we started in the middle of the season, we did that, and we kind of went away from that.
Yeah, that's fair. But I think Upshaw's a good choice for the game ball, and you know, maybe it's half of a game ball for this game. You know, the part of me does want to actually, you know, I've got a couple names down. You know, part of me does want to say Darius because, you know, he did well at setting their edge, and I've got Upshaw's name down because, you know, because he just played out of his head. But the guy that I just can't shake in terms of a game ball, and I can't really pin anything on it other than just his effort and his tenacity and his fight that he demonstrated through the game. And maybe this is just sentimental because he's a senior, but Preston Dowell just seemed to, and he's not as athletic, and he's not as skilled, and he's not as talented, but if everyone on the team put forth the effort that Preston Dowell demonstrated, we win the game hands down. And for that reason, I'm going to give my game ball to, my mini game ball to Preston Dowell because he just seemed to have a lot of passion with what he was trying to do out there. And unfortunately, his passion wasn't enough.
Well, you know, like you said, I mean, some of the blocks he leveled and you know, not in addition to his pass receptions, but some of the lead blocking he did and just the never quit attitude. You're right. I wish more players on this team this year had that 60-minute attitude that he does.
Yep. What's your takeaway from this game?
You know, we just were not able to get the momentum back. We had opportunities that were handed to us. I mean, this team, you know, for Auburn to score that touchdown and then kick the ball out of bounds, and we've got the ball at the 40. And so what do? We have, you know, we go 10 yards. Then they fumble that, you know, they score their next touchdown and they fumble the punt. And you can see we're behind the Auburn players where we sit, and you can see the Auburn players like, oh, man. And you and I know I was thinking, okay, we got great field position here. You know, we're starting on their 27-yard line.
Yep.
Next thing you know, we have first and goal at the 7. We have the pass interference call on Julio that gets negated. We would have had first and goal. But it's just like the couple times we had a chance to take the momentum back in the second half, we just couldn't take it back.
You're right. And, you know, like I said before, you know, you think of a heavyweight match trading blows, but we didn't. We landed all ours first. And then they landed all of theirs, and theirs were at the end and had the net effect of winning the game. I'm going to go a couple different places with my takeaway, and I have two takeaways, and they're a little more broader than just this game. But one is just, you know, the more things change, the more things kind of stay the same in the SEC. And at the beginning of the season, everyone was saying, you know, the sort of two dark horse picks to upset Alabama during the course of the season were South Carolina and Arkansas. And so there's no small amount of irony in the fact that Arkansas, depending upon the championship game, they're poised for a BCS game, and South Carolina is in the championship game. And so that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, because they beat LSU. So
yeah, well, we almost dropped to Arkansas, and we did drop to South Carolina. And so, you know, there's a little bit of prophetic nature there. But to think at the end of the season, at the end of the day, how successful those two teams have been. And then, and I guess just the second thing is, I don't know if this is a silver lining or maybe just some rationalization, but you and I in California last year, the morning after the championship game, we had breakfast and we sat outside the hotel and we just kind of took an exhale and we said, you know, we're probably more relieved at this point than we are ecstatic because, you know, we won the game and we persevered and we fought through. And I sat there and I didn't say anything at the time because I thought, well, this is just a deal I'm going to make with myself. And we didn't know that we were going to do a podcast. And so it sounds like I'm making it up now. But I sat there and I said, you know what? As hopeful as I'm going to be next year, I'm going to remember this minute, this moment, so, you know, kind of basking in the national championship. And I'm going to accept whatever happens next season, realizing that we just won the national championship. It's been 17 years since we've had a chance to do this. God knows it might be 17 years again. And so I'll trade whatever happens next season for the fact that I get to enjoy this moment. And so we make those deals with ourselves, and I guess we kind of kick ourselves when they actually come to fruition, because sitting here at 9-3 makes me sick to my stomach. But I do get to recall the fact that we did sit there in Pasadena, and we did sit there, you know, at the hotel the next morning, you know, basking the fact that, you know, that we were national champions. So, you know, we still have that within our recent grasp, and we still have a young team and an opportunity to grow and build in the future. So I guess those are kind of my takeaways. We don't have a next week to aspire to. We have to suffer through the Auburn South Carolina championship game. But the equivalent of next week is our bowl game. And so we do have a lot to fight for. We have an opportunity for 10 wins, which is not an insignificant feat. And the chatter that I'm hearing right now, and I guess I go from top down, is an opportunity to play in the Cotton Bowl on January the 7th, the Outback Bowl on January the 1st, Capital One Bowl on January the 1st, and the Chick-fil-A Bowl on the 31st, actually here in Atlanta. The one that I'm hearing the most about is Capital One in Orlando and potentially playing Michigan State. And I think that's an interesting matchup. Coach Saban coached at Michigan State. But that's what I'm hearing in terms of the bowl games. We don't yet know where we're going to go. Where would you like to see us go? What kind of opponent would you like to see us play? Putting you on the spot here, I understand.
You know, I guess as far as an opponent, you know, I'd like to play, I'd like to play a team that has a non-running quarterback. I'd like to play a team that's a traditional drop back passer, so that we can try to do what we do best.
Yep.
You know, I guess when you talk about, you know, we need to be happy that, you know, enjoy what happened last year and how long it's been since it happened. You know, I guess the other thing too is that it was just a couple years ago that, you know, we were a team that wasn't going to bowl games.
Yep.
And we were a team that wasn't getting an extra 2 or 3 weeks of practice. And so I guess with the talent that this team has and the youth that this team has, you know, whether it's a January 1 or a January 7, you know, that's going to be 20 valuable days of practice that's really going to help this team next year.
It really will. It really will. And the youngsters get an additional chance to practice. So it is significant. And this week, this next week with the championship games, not just in the SEC but in other conferences, that'll kind of tell the tale. Where the teams are where they're gonna line up, and then the selection committees for each of the respective bowls, where they're gonna pick teams, and where we're gonna end up. It does look like we have an opportunity for a January 1st bowl, which is always some cachet and some allure to that. And if we get to go somewhere in Florida and play, which is a recruiting hotbed, or even Dallas and which is a recruiting hotbed as well, then, you know, there's some opportunities there. You know, the last time that we played in the Cotton Bowl in Dallas, we lured away Greg McElroy. And so maybe there's a little symmetry if we go to Dallas. You know, he had committed to Texas Tech. And when we went down there, I think he had an opportunity to meet some of the coaching staff in person. And so we lured him away. So maybe that's some symmetry. We'll see. You want to come back and do another one of these after the bowl game?
I think that would be a good idea.
All right, let's do that. This has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Thanks for tuning in, and roll Tide.
Thank you for tuning in to the Alabama Football Podcast, the only Alabama podcast giving away BCS championship tickets. For more, find us on Facebook under Alabama Football Podcast.
Aye.
Visit us on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com.
Aye.
Email at alabamafootballpodcast@gmail.com.
Aye.
And don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes.
Aye.
Blow the horn. Let's go.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the sole place they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
He fumbled and Alabama has recovered.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown, Alabama.
It's 13 national championships.
Roll Tide.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Nothing they can play against. And make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO with the team.
Daniel Moore, get your canvas ready.
I was going to say something, and I don't know what I was going to say.
It's okay. You can just start off with something else.
Yeah.